Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. You guys have been fantastic. Our mailbox is already loaded with a bunch of really great questions for Wednesday's episode, so continue to drop those voicemails, text messages, whatever you have for us. I know tomorrow night is the big night, and so we want all of your reaction instantly after we find out what pick the Bulls will have this summer. Drop your reaction, 331-979-1369, and we'll make sure to play that on Wednesday's episode and react as following. Matt, welcome back from the weekend. One day, less than 24 hours till we find out our fate. How are you feeling?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Hope everybody had a great weekend. I'm increasingly excited and nervous and... Oh gosh, I'm ready to be done waiting. It's actually something that the Bulls president Michael Reinsdorf said in an interview with Mullion Haw Monday morning, is that he has felt like this wait for the lottery night has taken forever. And it seems like the Bulls season ended a while ago now. May 13th? The Bulls' final game of the season was April 10th. So it's been more than a month of just sitting around and waiting and conjecture of, well, what if this happens? And what if they get this pick? And what about this player? What about that player? How big of a leap will they get if they get Ja or Zion? And it's now like, it all comes down to this, as they say, and I am just trying my best to come into tomorrow night with a positive outlook and that things are going to go our way. And that's what I'm going to try to do for the next 24 hours, and we'll see what happens. And if it doesn't go our way, I don't know how I'll feel, but I don't want to think about that yet.
I feel like my anxiety levels were higher when we were actually playing the games towards the end of the season, and you just constantly see the... how close the Bulls were to the Cavs and the Suns to getting into the top three at certain points in the season. Now it's like, okay, everything is set. We have no control over it. Nobody has any control over it. So let the chips fall where they may. And I'm trying to talk myself into a little bit of a conspiracy over the next 24 hours. The lottery being here in Chicago, the All-Star game being in Chicago next season, all of these things, for me at least, tying up. And it's like, your generational player coming out of college, you want him to land in a big market. If you're the NBA, you want him to land in a big market. So is that New York? Is that Chicago? Is that some of these other places that are lower down in the lottery? I'm very interested to see where Zion goes, because if he goes to a small market, what does that do for the NBA, like, you know?
If he goes to Cleveland, that would just be the biggest bummer. I would hate to see him. That's some other news that happened this weekend. Michigan coach John Beilein getting a 5-year deal from Cleveland. And it's his first NBA head coaching gig at age, 66?
Yeah.
The guy's a dinosaur. that was pretty interesting. But the Lakers don't want to offer Ty Lue a 5-year deal. And here's Cleveland offering John Beilein a 5-year deal. How much of a disappointment would it be? How much of a anticlimactic bummer if the Cleveland, let's be real, the Cavs don't deserve any more number one picks. How many have they gotten in the last, three of the last 6 years or something crazy like that?
They picked one of the biggest busts in NBA history in Anthony Bennett with one of those first picks.
Right, which, you know, it's their own damn fault. But I think as much as I would hate to see Zion go to the Knicks, at least it would be cool if the Knicks were relevant again. Because the Knicks haven't been relevant since... I mean, like, I wouldn't even call, like, the Carmelo, Amari Stoudemire Knicks relevant. Like, they were in a couple of playoff series 10 years ago, but that's, I mean, that's basically it. Before that, you got to go back to, like, the Allen Houston, Latrell Sprewell Knicks who were relevant. And they are, they're the biggest market team. So if it can't be us, I guess I would be okay with it being the Knicks. And I think it would hurt me even more if some random team with a very slim chance somehow jumps up and, like, you know, pole vaults the Bulls and all these teams across the top three, because that is a real thing that the Bulls fans have to prepare themselves for, is that we've got a 12.5% chance of number one tomorrow. We've got, you know, a 12.25, I think, chance at number two, and then three and four. But falling behind four, where they are currently slotted, to 5, 6, 7, or 8 collectively is a greater than 50-50 chance. I think it's like 52% when you add up the likelihood of picks 5, 6, 7, and 8. So that's the real thing that can happen, and God, I hope it doesn't.
Yeah, and I've kind of talked myself into those scenarios too, that the Bulls falling from 4 to either 7 or 6, which... 7, I think you have a 25 point something chance of falling from 4 to 7. To me, like, if that happens, then, you know, I think about how this season should have went without all the injuries. And I know from people talking about hindsight and saying, well, it's easy to say that now, but realistically, if everybody was healthy, the Bulls were probably picking around 7 to 10, or they would be in the lottery somewhere around 7 to 10, 7 to 11. Talking about 35 wins like we were at the beginning of September before all the injuries and this chaotic season happened. I mean, there's still players there that I want, and I wouldn't be pissed that the Bulls took, but at the same time, like, generational talent's available at 1, and you slide right from 4 to 7 would really suck. But I think I've kind of gotten over the freak out, and we'll see what actually happens tomorrow if I can convince myself of that. But when I saw the Bulls fall last year, I was pretty pissed, you know, and seeing Sacramento jump from 6 or from 7 to 2, I was like, are you serious? So we'll find out. I hope Zion does not go to Phoenix, though. If there's any place on this board, it's Phoenix and Cleveland that I don't think deserve Zion. So that's
right.
Just me.
Cleveland's
though.
Had a zillion number one picks in recent years. And Phoenix, I mean, if you want to talk about a team in more disarray and, you know, confusion and where is the direction, what is the direction compared to our Bulls here in Chicago, Phoenix is probably one of the few teams you could point to as to being more hopeless and helpless right now. You know, the Lakers have their own shit show going on right now, which is wildly entertaining. But yeah, I mean, Phoenix does not deserve Zion. They don't.
Can we talk about that really fast before we get to some other stuff?
Oh, yes, please.
This is why we don't do a live protest, people. This is exactly why you don't do a live protest in front of a stadium. For that matter, in front of anywhere. You're going to get a fraction of the fan base to come out. And what the Lakers fans did, what was that, Friday afternoon?
Yeah.
That is straight up embarrassing.
Hilarious.
And people had texted us in and asked, you know, why are the Lakers getting all this coverage for their fans being outraged, yet the Bulls have been in despair for the last half a decade and fans have been so pissed off? Why don't we get any coverage? Well, I'll tell you a little something. ESPN's studio is right outside the Staples Center, and that's why these fans were able to get all these cameras out there and people were taking live shots of them. To me, that was... If Bulls fans did that, I would be super embarrassed because some of the things that they were saying.
Oh, it was
ridiculous.
Dumb. That one guy who went viral, who was like, step one, fire everybody. Step two, get all the best players.
Oh, my God.
I just, you know, yes, the Bulls and Lakers have some parallels as far as being big market
teams. They
have
LeBron freaking
teams.
LeBron James.
LeBron is on their team. If the Bulls fans are wondering why we don't get coverage for when fans organize protest stuff, well, that billboard did get some national coverage. Not that it did anything or solved any problems, but it did. And there's no, like, Bulls fans didn't protest this year because the team was bad and most people expected them to be bad. Even if, like, yeah, the injuries made them worse, but nobody thought the Bulls were going to be a playoff team this year, or at least not a relevant one. So guess what? If you don't have that, and over in LA you have a team that just landed LeBron, still arguably one of the best players in the league and the biggest star, unquestionably, in the league, playing on a Hollywood team that people expected, because it got LeBron, would be a contender. And had all of that drama happen to them, the Anthony Davis saga, LeBron not getting along with his young teammates, Lonzo Ball and everything that happened with that guy. And it was a giant circus, and it happened in LA with LeBron. So of course it's getting coverage.
The one guy, the one kid that I couldn't get past, the one that kept repeating the same line to like 8 different news outlets. He's like, my grandfather had Kareem, my dad had Magic, my brother had Kobe, and now I have LeBron. It's like, dude, just stop there. Listen to yourself. Listen to yourself. 4 generations of your family have all had superstars in the NBA. And Bulls fans are lucky. You're lucky enough if you lived through that Michael Jordan era to actually remember it. Because that's all we have. That is all we have. And yet we've got Lakers fans complaining that they have LeBron James.
LeBron James.
You have LeBron James on your team, and you're starting protests outside the stadium? That's just mind-blowing to me, man. Absolutely mind-blowing.
But some of the things that have happened to the Lakers, and not just LeBron and the fact that it was an underwhelming first year and they missed the playoffs, and there was that, you know, the player chemistry issue and the Anthony Davis trade that failed. But some of the things that happened towards the end of the season and into the offseason, like Magic Johnson resigning and telling the media before he told Jeannie Buss, and Jeannie Buss seizing a power move earlier, and, you know, before we got the Magic and Rob Pelinka regime, you know, ditching her brother and ditching Mitch Kupchak and all this drama that's happened, and then the coaching stuff that has happened over the last, you know, week or so, 10 days, that has been hilarious. Ty Lue, LeBron likes him. He took a team to the finals 3 straight years. He's got a championship ring. No, we don't. We're only going to give him a 3-year offer, and we're going to insist that he put Jason Kidd on his staff. And Ty Lue said, fuck you, I don't want to do that, and left. And all of these other coaches are getting picked up all over the league. And they're like, all right, well, we found our guy, Frank Vogel. Phil Jackson likes Frank Vogel. Kurt Rambis likes Frank Vogel. Frank Vogel's our guy, but also we're insisting on including Jason Kidd in this. Jason Kidd, who has a history of usurping people in the head coach's chair in his coaching career, who also has this weird, you know, kind of blurry, people don't really talk about it, people forget about it, domestic violence stuff in his past that, like, I think it was Ramona Shelburne said, you know, when she was talking at some point over the weekend, that's the reason that they just didn't pick him as their head coach and only the assistant coach. Is like, well, if you take a domestic abuser and put him as one of the assistant coaching chairs, it's less of a bad look as naming him head coach. But we all basically agree that Jason Kidd's going to usurp Vogel and be the head coach eventually. Oh, and by the way, the last coaching gig Jason Kidd had, they basically just returned the same roster, replaced him with Mike Budenholzer, and that team is on the way to the conference finals. So what about Jason Kidd is a good idea? That kind of stuff to me makes sense as why are Lakers fans pissed off right now? Because it's chaos and none of it makes sense.
It's crazy. You think about that Lakers team, just even just looking at it from 1,000 feet. You got Kurt Rambis, who's been a part of that organization for God knows how long. And what knowledge does he have that makes you think that he can do any of the job that he's supposed to, or recruit any talent, or be any of a smart mind in basketball other than wearing some sweet goggles like 30 years ago in the league?
Hey, man, don't knock goggles. Horace is wearing his tomorrow night. Goggles?
Oh, I'm excited.
Goggles
for
are good. Goggles are good right now, Jordan.
I'm excited for that. I love the Horace goggles. But on top of that, too, you hired a dude to be your GM that has never been a GM before. He was an agent before this. Has no idea what he's doing. And Matt, or our Bulls fans out there, if you haven't seen this before, go to YouTube and type in Rob Pelinka weird analogies. And he does these weird things at press conferences where he makes the same analogy all the time and the same connection. And they're so bizarre, but somebody had cut them all up in like a 10 or 15 minute video. It's absolutely hilarious, so go back and watch that on YouTube. But regardless of that, to me, I was thinking initially, I'm like, you interview Jason Kidd and Frank Vogel for the same job, and then you hire Jason Kidd to be his assistant? How do you think that's going to work? Jason Kidd's going to want that head coaching job eventually. So is there going to be constant undermining going on between those
two? Yeah, of course.
Like, that's what I don't get. How can you hire a guy that you just interviewed for the head coaching job and said, you know what, sorry, but we're gonna have you coach under Frank Vogel now? Like, to me, I just can't see how that works. And then on top of all of that, the Ty Lue stuff, Ty Lue didn't sign that contract because you weren't going to let him pick his coaching staff? Seriously? Yeah. Really? That is mind-blowing.
So, again, to loop back to our team, Jordan, good reminder that as we watched all of that nonsense unfold with the Lakers this weekend and Bulls fans say how, you know, we have the worst managed and worst run organization in the league. It's a joke. It's a farce. How do these people have their job? Could be worse. Yeah, we don't have LeBron, but, you know, how much longer will LeBron, as a player who leads teams to championship contention, how much longer will he be a factor? And will he ever get that done in L.A.? I think the answer to that is no. But even still, you know, Bulls fans, it's not like you would turn up your nose at the idea of LeBron. But even still, just as far as the way organizations are run and the way that the fan base here in Chicago, by and large, I'm not saying across the board, but by and large, has a problem with the mismanagement that exists, it could be worse because the Lakers and, as we mentioned earlier, the Suns look to be two teams that are doing a poorer job than the Bulls right now.
Yeah, that's for sure. And if they weren't in Los Angeles and they weren't wearing the purple and gold, you move them to any other market and that place is burning to the ground or legitimately nobody's caring about it. That's the two things. And then you heard the mayor of LA say that it's a Clippers town in an interview this weekend. It said, no, I've been a diehard Lakers fan, but this is a Clippers town right now. I'm like, oh my God.
I mean, even to say something that like that just sounds insane.
It does.
It is the Lakers. It is the Showtime Lakers. It's the Wilt Lakers. It's the Jerry West Lakers. It's the Magic and Kareem Lakers, James Worthy, and then Kobe and Shaq, like the best, you know, rivaling with Boston, most successful franchise in NBA history. And you got your little baby brother team being like, well, actually, like the Clippers pushed the Warriors to six games this playoff run.
It's unbelievable.
And everybody likes that Clippers team.
It's unbelievable. I don't know what they're doing, but yeah, just to circle back to our team here, the Bulls. They get enough press coverage as it is, and we don't need something like what happened with Lakers fans, which is just utterly embarrassing, to happen with this team. That's why nobody, protests are pointless at this point, you know? Like, you're going to get a little bit of media coverage, but if you don't have fans coming out in the thousands, that just looks embarrassing. Then you get a fraction of the fan base coming out and trying to stage a protest that lasted, what, 15 minutes? And then there was like a dozen people outside the Lakers stadium. And guess what? On top of all of that, the Lakers front office isn't even at Staples Center. It's not.
Yeah, their offices are somewhere else.
So to me, it was just ridiculous. But I had a good laugh from that. The playoffs were really great. It was a good weekend. And it was a good weekend to at least sit back and laugh at some other teams and not focus on some of the negatives going on with the Bulls. And maybe there's some positive coming out of tomorrow. But real quick, I just wanted to mention, Matt, did you see LeBron James' son play up against supposedly the next coming of LeBron James and Amani Bates? He's going to be the class of 2022 going into college, supposed to be the next big thing, supposed to be like a Zion, like a LeBron James. And Bronny went head to head with him this weekend, and that was pretty cool to watch.
I saw like, I think a quick clip video that somebody put on Twitter. I didn't watch it extensively. I have my issue with this, and I know that somewhere in the not-so-distant future, we're gearing up towards getting rid of this one-and-done rule and high school players being able to make that leap straight to the NBA like players back in the day used to. And so maybe we're getting to a point where we need to start paying closer attention to kids who were playing high school ball, AAU ball, and even on the cusp of that, kids who are, like, in middle school. How old is Bronny now? Like, is he like
a freshman in high school?
Freshman in high school. Okay, right. So like, he's a freshman in high school, and there have been videos of this kid playing basketball on Twitter and everywhere on social media already for like 6 years. Like when he was in the, you know, fifth grade, sixth grade, like when he was kid playing little kid basketball, and like would make some awesome shot or some, you know, some full court pass or whatever, and it would go viral. And it'd be like, okay, this is the son of LeBron James. LeBron, in his own way, has like talked about this, about how he both kind of regrets and knows that it's something he has to deal with as far as the exposure that his kids get as young athletes, and not just his children. But to me, it's like it's too soon. Like when I've been seeing videos of Bronny James on Twitter over the last several years, I'm like, why do we care yet? Why, you know, if this kid goes on to be a, you know, top 100 prospect, and we are in an age where he might make a leap, if he's that good, we don't know if he's going to be that good yet, just because he's LeBron's son. If he is that good, and we're talking about a day and age when now high school players are making the leap to the NBA straight away again, then fine. I'll watch him play basketball his senior year of high school. But until then, and maybe this is just like an old cranky guy kind of take, and we all know I have those from time to time, I don't care. I give zero shits about 14-year-old Bronny James playing ball. Zero.
It's kind of crazy because in the next 5 years, there's going to be, I feel like if the NBA goes to that 18 rule and allows players to come into the league, we're going to see a shift in focus on more people are going to be excited about high school recruiting and high school games and championship games in high school and AAU than we will about college basketball. Like, I feel like at times there's going to be more excitement right around that than there is about college basketball, because a lot of those top recruits aren't going to go to college. They're going to go straight to the NBA. And whether or not it's going to be four or five,
as long as the NCAA insists on not paying their
right,
players.
Exactly. And obviously, you're still going to have some decent quality players going to college, but it's not going to be anywhere near like you saw Zion playing for Duke. Like, if the NBA goes to 18 and you can go into the league, you'll never see that again. You'll never, ever see that again. So right. I think it was pretty incredible.
Some of those Calipari teams and some of those Coach K teams that are like all lottery-bound players who play 1 year and are some of the best assemblance of college right. talent, all those players are just going to go straight to the NBA.
Right.
And college basketball is going to suffer, like, a lot.
So, I found it funny. I find it funny already, too. Kentucky already offered LeBron James Jr. So, for the class of 2023. Class of 2023, and he's already got an offer from Kentucky. So, Duke, Kansas, North Carolina, and UCLA are also other teams that have visited and are interested in him. So, yeah, I found that very interesting.
We're going to get to a point where it's like a five-year-old dunking on one of those little Nerf hoops that you put in the corner of your living room. And it's like, oh, sign that kid immediately.
I saw a kid on social media a couple weeks ago, not a couple weeks, a couple months ago, that was doing it on a little Tyke hoop, and he was like 2 years old. And he was doing the Euro step. He had the dunks down. It was crazy. I couldn't believe it. 2 or 3 years old at this point. You got kids already having ball handling skills, shooting skills. It's ridiculous, but LeBron James Jr. too is going to have a growing spurt. He's 5'10", 150 right now.
He's going to get scooped up by that kid on the little tyke hoop. Is going to get scooped up by LeVar and brought to Lithuania to play pro ball.
Stay in your lane.
Oh, LeVar's got a lot more problems than figuring out what he's going to do with his league, and he's got a lot of problems going on right now. The Ball family does so. But yeah, I'm curious to see where LeBron James Jr.'s growth spurt goes to, because 5'10", there's no way he stays at 5'10". So if he enters his senior year and he's like 6'7", 6'8", like the way his dad is, that could be a problem. The dude is already ridiculous, and he can dunk already at 5'10", which is crazy at freshman level. But spending way too much time on AAU and LeBron's son, so let's shift gears and let's go to... let's go to a conversation that happened this morning on 670 The Score. Michael Reinsdorf talked with the Mully and Haw show, and man, it was basically the same thing that I thought it was going to be. It's a lot like a lot of the other interviews, and once again, we got a mention of Doug Collins, which seems to happen every single time John Paxson or Michael Reinsdorf or even Jim Boylan, for that fact, talk now. I think it's been over a year now where we hear every single mention of Doug Collins in almost every single interview.
Yeah, and the funniest part to me was when Michael said that he couldn't quite remember what the name of Doug's role was. What's Doug Collins' title? What right. role does he serve on this team? Which, ironically, is how most of the fan base feels. I was like, wait, Remember what we heard 3 years ago that they brought in Doug Collins as like an advisor or something, but we never really hear from him. What's going on? We always just hear from Pax that he's like a great sounding board and we like to talk basketball and bounce ideas off each other. But what, you know, it's like the, you know, the two Bobs from Office Space. Like, what would you say you do here? And that's how the fan base feels about Doug. So to hear Michael say that, and I know some of the, you know, I was somebody already, because I quote tweeted that and laughed my ass off on Twitter, and everybody's saying, or somebody said, you know, this is just, you know, bloggers and reporters nitpicking those quotes to just make the front office and ownership look as bad as possible. Whatever, whatever. It was a silly foot and mouth moment because the fan base feels that way. The fan base is confused as to what the hell Doug Collins is doing here. And Michael Reinsdorf said in an interview on live sports talk radio, I can't ever really remember what Doug's title is. Come on.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I caught that too, and I was like, well, maybe Doug Collins wasn't Michael Reinsdorf's idea, and maybe that was his dad's, and so he still doesn't really understand what the job title is either. So I found that funny. And it's weird too, because Doug Collins seems to be all over the place. He's like their Swiss Army knife of old school basketball, like talking to Jim Boyle and being the mentor for him, and also being an advisor and a mentor for John Paxson and Gar Foreman. So he's like all over the place, yet we never hear from him, like from a fan's perspective or a radio perspective. We haven't heard from him once. I don't think he's done a single interview anywhere since he's been hired with the Bulls, which I find very interesting. So beyond that, though, like it circled back to having to explain what John Paxson and Gar Foreman's role was and why he still believes in them and what he thinks they can do and going through their draft history and all of that. It's like we do this every single time that they get on radio. And I understand that they have to do that because the questions are brought up because we never really get a real clear answer from anybody. But still, at some point, it's like, Dude, I don't understand the point of you going on radio if it's just going to be the same thing over and over and over again. Although, I will say, to Michael Reinsdorf's credit, he was a little lighthearted this morning, more so than we normally hear from him, so he was cracking some jokes, but I was telling you that, I mean, it's kind of hard to crack jokes when your baseball team lost 100 games last year and your basketball team lost about 50 games this year, so I don't know. I think he's just in a place where he hopes Zion Williamson is the pick that the Bulls have this summer. So I think he's holding out a lot of hope, just like fans are.
Yeah, I'm sure that Reinsdorf knows if they don't get Ja or Zion, this fan base is going to be really hard to rile up and get excited for next season. Even with, let's bring into training camp and preseason a healthy, better Lauri Markkanen, a healthy, better Zach LaVine. We brought in Otto and solved our point or our 3-and-D problem. We're getting some other healthy pieces back. And, you know, it's year three of the rebuild. We should be better. And that's what Reinsdorf did say in this interview, was like, you know, we'll add a piece in this draft regardless of if it's a top two pick or not. We'll get a good quality player. We're going to get some guys healthy. And between just those couple of factors, he believes that they're going to make a leap. He cited the fact that the Bulls only won 9 home games this season, franchise low. The fact that it's almost hard to only win 9 of 41 home games. And that he said, even if you just, you know, win half your home games next season, then that's an 11-win improvement on what you did now. And you're talking about being not 22 wins, but 33 wins. And maybe you get some more wins on the road as well. So he was trying to like paint that optimistic picture, regardless of how the lottery shakes down tomorrow night. And I can at least give him a little bit of credit for trying to paint that positive picture. But it's no guarantee that the Bulls are going to be good enough to win half their home games next season. It's just not. It's just something that he hopes, which is why this whole idea of, well, hope and luck is not a strategy or a plan. And a lot of the fan base right now, and I put myself in this category, feels like if they don't get lucky tomorrow night, I still don't feel very good about this rebuild. I like Markkanen. I like LaVine. Do I think we're building a championship contending level team? No. Not even close.
Yeah, and that's the disappointing part of it. And that's why I think I really hope that the Bulls get creative if they do fall out of the 1 or 2 spot. Like, get creative and start legitimately looking at trades you can make to upgrade your team immediately. Like that's the like that's where my mindset is now. You know, I've been talking about like trading down and doing all these other things, and I'm trying to put myself in the position of here's where the Bulls think they're going. So I need to shape my mentality towards that now. Whether or not that gets you closer to an NBA championship or not, I think it's unproductive at this point to talk about everything we want them to do because we know more than likely that's not what they're going to do, right? So to figure out where the Bulls want to be in 2 years or where the Bulls think they're going to be in 2 years, I think is a place where they want to be is middle of the pack in the playoffs. Seriously, I think that's where they're aiming for right now. With all of these deals that they've made, and depending on what they do in free agency too, if they sign a guy like Ricky Rubio or Darren Collison or Patrick Beverley, to me that screams, we want to try to get competitive now, and we'll see where it takes us in the East. And 2 years from now, when Otto Porter Jr. is off our contract, then maybe we can think about upgrading and maybe we can chase a star again. But for right now, I think their goal is to just to get back in the playoffs and get back to the middle of the road. And we're back at mediocrity again then. You know, right. I hope it doesn't get to that point, but I feel like that's where the Bulls are at. They're not aiming to rebuild this whole thing up again to the point where they could get to an NBA championship. I think that they hit the reset button because they needed to get rid of Jimmy and they didn't want to pay him. And now they're rebuilding on the fly and hoping that they can get back to the middle of the pack in the playoffs and make fans happy again, or at least not happy, but maybe at least content at where they're at and being competitive
that was another part of the conversation, and it's something that Casey Johnson wrote about in the Trib over the weekend, this thing about Michael Reinsdorf reaching out on a more regular basis to some of the season ticket holders, you know, inviting them to the owner's suite, engaging in emails and phone calls, and essentially just trying to hear more of the voice of the fan base, because that's something he didn't used to do. And he was like, oh, maybe I should make this part of my job. It's like, yeah, maybe you should, Michael. But that he, you know, they're talking about trying to retain these season ticket holders. And we saw that the Bulls TV ratings this past season were like the lowest they'd been in like a decade. The Bulls fell after always being atop the league in attendance to second in the league in attendance, but that in as far as capacity, not actual tickets sold, but actual butts in seats, they fell all the way to 17th this year after routinely, for basically going back to the Jordan years, being atop the league in capacity at the UC, the biggest stadium in the NBA. So they know that those kinds of things are happening and that they are not retaining those season ticket holders. And some of those single season ticket or some of those single game ticket purchasers are the ones who are saying, you know, until y'all fix this and get this shit figured out, I ain't going. I'm not spending my money on this anymore. So Reinsdorf is aware that as big of a team as they are starting to suffer some of those consequences that you were just kind of pointing out. But if they get back, as you said, to just... And the phrase Paxson used in his season-ending press conference was what? In the hunt. If the Bulls are a in-the-hunt team, then all of a sudden I think you see that capacity number go back up. You see those ratings go back up because Bulls fans are so obsessed and so loyal, as we say sometimes on the pod, loyal to a fault, that if it's at least halfway decent basketball, they're going to tune in and they're going to spend their money because the fans love the team that much. So Reinsdorf knows they just need to get back to in the hunt, mediocre. And that'll fix a lot of their problems.
Yeah, I think that's a short-term solution, right, too? Like, that's what we've kind of been talking about since the rebuild. We hit the reset button. You know, I remember talking about this back in the summer when we had just traded Jimmy, and you and I were kind of having that reaction talk. We're like, okay, if we're going to put ourselves 5 years from now, are the Bulls going to be any closer to an NBA championship than they were with Jimmy or trying to build around Jimmy at the end of that contract, right? Because they were going to sign Jimmy, if they didn't trade him, to the five-year max. So if they did that, are you any closer to an NBA championship by hitting the reset button than you would be by holding on to Jimmy and just paying him his money? Like, 2 years into this now, I felt more confident that the Bulls would be on a path to an NBA championship by hitting the reset button. Now, I feel like I'm a little bit uncertain. Matt, even back at the trade deadline, when I asked you, you know, them making the trade for Otto Porter Jr., I said, you know, I had a clear direction of the first year and a half of this rebuild. And even with all the injuries that happened in this second year, I kind of told you, I said, I think I'm starting to see things kind of hazy as far as where this path is going. And what they're trying to do. Are we just spinning our wheels here and hoping that we land somebody, generational talent in the draft, and that's what we build on because they can't hit on any free agents? Or are they going to just play this out with the guys that they have and see where the chips may fall? And like, I don't think that's a very good strategy either. I don't feel like they're aggressive, but I also don't feel like that the Bulls are being passive either. They're sitting somewhere in this middle, and that's where I wanted the Bulls to get out of when we were talking about this in 2017, is get out of mediocrity, whether it's going all the way and leaning all the way into aggressive moves or being a team that's going to sit back and be true to your word and keep cap flexibility open and try to chase some free agents, as opposed to just saying, you know what, I'm going to fold and I'm going to cut my losses now and we're going to go and trade for Otto and this is what we're going to do because we're going to strike out in free agency anyway. So, like, we had a plan at the beginning. Now the plan to me is still pretty hazy. And if the Bulls get Zion, then maybe it's not as hazy as it was back in February. But I still feel like that. And I wonder if other Bulls fans feel the same way that I
do. Here's the difference, though. When you talk about leaving mediocrity just to fight to get back to mediocrity. And maybe that are you better off conundrum that Bulls fans grapple with after the Jimmy trade is, you know, in some ways misleading when you think about it in those terms. And, you know, brace yourselves, because this is actually me playing devil's advocate for the Bulls still, I believe, having made the right decision.
Are you going to play devil's advocate?
The Bulls this season, by aggregate age of their players, were the youngest team in the league. The youngest team in the league. Fighting your way to get back to being relevant or in the hunt or whatever, or mediocre or whatever phrase you want to use, fighting for somewhere in the 5-8 playoff range in a weak Eastern Conference, starting with a team that is has potential, has talent, and is the youngest team in the league is different than being stuck in mediocrity with an aging Jimmy Butler with a lot of miles on his legs and facing giving an aging Jimmy Butler a super max that would have paid him somewhere between $200 and $250 million with a grossly backloaded contract as Jimmy gets into his 30s and also trying to build around him with what? Not younger and more athletic, as the joke always went, but with an aging Dwayne Wade and an aging Rajon Rondo. That team was old and stuck in mediocrity. They decided to not pay Jimmy that humongous contract for the back end of his prime and get rid of all the old guys and go young. So to me, like, that is the one element of where you can still find some optimism. Because, again, as I said just 5 minutes or so ago, I'm not convinced yet that Markkanen, LaVine, Wendell, and whoever we get in this draft is enough to build a roster that is championship contention worthy someday. I don't believe in that right now based on what we've seen. But it's still the youngest roster in the league. And there is area for growth. Whereas when Jimmy is your best player and he's about to get a giant contract that will be overpaying him, no disrespect to Jimmy, and surrounding him with a bunch of old aging veterans, there's a difference between fighting back to mediocrity with a young roster and being stuck in mediocrity with an old.
True. And a lot of those other teams, too, you look at that have rebuilt in the past 5 years, past 7 years. A lot of those teams that have tried to build young, they accelerated their process by bringing in a star, right? Like, even as much of a dumpster fire as the Lakers are right now, they brought in LeBron to try to take it to the next level. You know, and you look at the opposite end of that. Like, look at Orlando. Look how long it took Orlando just to get back to the playoffs with all of the picks that they have had and all of the young players that they've tried to build around since Dwight. It was almost a decade since Dwight. Like, that's crazy to me. If you can't bring in a star, you might be floating in this mediocrity or lower than mediocrity for a decade. Like, that's just the reality of the NBA right now. And that's what Paxton, I think, is so frustrated by, and that's what you heard him say in February. It's like, man, yeah, like, obviously we're going to keep our doors open, but, you know, in order to get to that next step, you need a star in this league. And it's like, of course, a lot of fans understand that. Every NBA fan that watches the game regularly understands that, where this league's at now. So I agree with you. I think that the core that they have right now can be a lot of fun, but do I think it's going to get us to an NBA Finals eventually? I'm not so sure about that. I think this team can be fun when healthy, and they are a playoff team when healthy. Maybe not next year, but 2 years from now, 3 years from now, sure. I definitely think that this team can be a playoff team, but how far does that actually get you in an Eastern Conference that has three teams that could be there for the next 5 years? Like, if Kawhi stays in Toronto, they're going to be at the top of the East for the next 5 years. If the 76ers keep their entire team together, they're going to be at the top of the East. If Milwaukee's going to be at the top of the East for a long time. So you got three teams that you're chasing.
And let's not forget Oladipo going down, and the fact that Pacers team would have been a hell of a lot better. Even making the playoffs the way they did was impressive, but if the Pacers keep Oladipo and put some pieces around him, like, there are plenty of teams in the East that are, like, for the foreseeable future, going to be significantly
true.
Better than the Bulls.
And we talked about four teams and didn't even bring up the Celtics yet. And the Celtics could be good.
Right.
They can be good. They're still good. Even if they lose Kyrie, or if they bring Kyrie back, which, that's a different discussion for a different day, but still, there's moves to be made. Like, there are people talking about Anthony Davis still getting traded to Boston. So if Boston makes a move, even if they lose Kyrie and they don't get Anthony Davis, they're still a top five team in the East. The team is still really damn good. So that's where I'm at. It's like, how do you stack yourself up against these top four, top five teams in the East? And how do you think that you're going to compete with them? Not even next year, 2, 3, 4 years from now, with the roster that you've assembled. Do you think that's good enough to beat those teams in a playoff series? To me right now, it's hard to see that outcome without that star. And that's where I think a lot of fans are in pain, and they're like frustrated because they get that the young players are good, but at some point you need a leader that is a superstar in this league to take you to that next level. And I get the East is softer than the West is, but still, those top three, top four Eastern Conference teams that are going to be there for the next 5 years are really damn good. So that's where I circled back to in the Michael Reinsdorf conversation, is like thinking about where he thinks this team is going to go and how they want to position themselves, and thinking that that John Paxson and Gar Foreman are the right guys for this job. And I'm like, man, I don't know if I don't agree with you, but as a Bulls fan and somebody who's sometimes irrational about what the Bulls should be doing, I hope he's right, man, because if the Bulls go 2 more years without landing a star, 3 more years without landing a star, and you find yourself with Markkanen being 24, 25 coming up on a contract, you find yourself with Carter coming up on a contract, Zach LaVine will be off his contract, you got a lot of decisions to make on guys that you don't necessarily know if they're stars or not. And look, there's still 2 or 3 years for that to happen, but still, like, it's a lot of questions, a lot of gray area, a lot of haziness for me right now. And maybe that's all resolved in 24 hours with this lottery. Maybe.
Maybe. But I'm with you there in that some of the same legitimizations we've heard from Reinsdorf this morning, like using the Derrick Rose injury again as an excuse. Like, come on. Really? Still? Saying, we had the best record in the league for those 2 years back-to-back, 11 and 12. And, he said, I'm not saying we would have won championships, but we would have been at least in contention for them if Rose didn't get hurt. Maybe that's true. But let's be real. It's not like your front office was deserving of a whole lot of credit for getting really, really lucky to draft Derek in the first place. And nobody knew that he was going to turn into the youngest MVP in league history. And how much credit are you giving the Bulls front office for that? And what is the likelihood of that happening versus the likelihood of a player like Derek in his size and the way he played getting injured? Because getting injured, probably more likely than landing him and him turning into an MVP in the first place. So I have a problem with them still using that excuse. And then the drafting well thing. Yeah, they do. They have more hits than misses. But that is a fraction of the job. And how many trades have they bungled? Even since the Derek Rose year, when they got lucky and built that championship contending team for a couple of seasons before it all fell apart. How many times do we have to mention Doug McDermott, Marquise Teague, Tony Snell? the campaign trade, signing Dwayne Wade, signing Rajon Rondo, and no accountability, signing freaking Jabari Parker. God, I forgot about him already. Out of sight, out of mind. I feel better. All of those mistakes are mistakes the front office made and is not held accountable for. So don't sit here and tell me, Michael Reinsdorf, about drafting well and Derrick Rose's injury. Enough. Enough.
Man, that's where I'm at, too, is like, do we need to really rehash all the draft picks every time he's on radio? And like, this isn't to be negative either. That's what I want people to, while you're listening to the back end of this episode, this isn't being negative. It's being realistic as to where the Bulls are going at. Like, that's where I've tried to be at throughout this rebuild, is be realistic about where this team could be at. Because I think if you set too high of expectations, you just make yourself, you make yourself go crazy, right? And that's for anything in, it's for any scenario in life. You set too high of expectations, and you know that that's not a realistic opportunity, a possibility, or there's a small chance of that happening, I just think you set yourself up for failure. And, you know, I go back to what you had just said in the hope and the waiting and the opportunity. That's not a, damn it, what's the saying that John Paxson says? Hope and
luck is not a strategy or a plan.
There it is. I go back to hope and luck is not a strategy for success. Like, I go back to that and think about that, and I'm like, man, I want to believe you when you say that, but what moves are you making that are saying that that's not a strategy that the Bulls are implementing right now, right? Like, that's where I go back to. So I hope these young guys turn out, but...
I suppose you could say that the auto trade was them facing reality and making a proactive decision to better themselves based on the reality of the situation.
That's true. That is very true.
But that's just like adding a role player on an overbloated contract.
Right.
Like, even Bulls fans for the most part were like, yeah, okay, that's, you know, you got rid of 2 1-way players, one of whom was, you know, due a contract he didn't deserve, one was on a contract he didn't earn, and you got Otto out of it and filled a position of need. So we legitimized it, but to use that as an example of, well, here's an example of them actually executing a strategy and a plan based on reality, is that the best we can come up with right now as an example of those kinds of decisions and taking action actually being a thing that exists? Because if so, that's kind of a bummer of an example to use.
Well, you fleeced Ernie Grunfeld. Of the Washington Wizards, who no longer holds his job. Like, to me, that's not really that big of an accomplishment, if I'm being completely honest with you. So, like, I get it. Otto's an underrated player. He's underrated as hell, but that contract is bloated as hell, too. Like, for a team that's competing and legitimately a top three or top four seed in any of these playoffs, sure, Otto is a definite impact player for you, but is he that guy for a team? He's the highest paid player on this Bulls team. Should he be the highest paid player on this Bulls team? And will we be as productive as that? No. So to me, I get it. Otto can still be moved. Like, there's still teams that will take him if the Bulls need to switch gears, but that's still a shitload of money. And you got to take contracts back.
I mean, like, by that logic, as you know, if Rolo comes off the books and going into this offseason of free agency, by that logic, like, is Felicio the fourth most useful player on this roster?
You're no Michael Jordan.
Right. Right. It's ridiculous. So I hope the Bulls do well in this lottery, and I'm very curious as to the moves that they're going to make this offseason. And I still really believe that this is a critical offseason. Like, the Bulls could put themselves and set themselves back 3 or 4 years in a rebuild this summer, depending on what moves that they decide to make. And depending on where the lottery ends up tomorrow night, it's still critical, depending on the draft pick, too. And I don't even think that that's the utmost importance, even if the Bulls fall from 4 to 7. I don't think there's that big of an outrage. But I think it's more critical about the moves that they're going to make this summer. Like, if you drop from 4 to 7, then you need to seriously think about starting to make some big time moves here. Because otherwise, are we just going to spin our wheels for the next 2 years before, so Otto can get off his contract and then you actually have money to free up? Like, that's where I'm like, I'm bouncing back and forth between all of these different things. It's like, what are we doing? What are we doing? And it goes back to my main theme. The rebuild in terms of what direction they're at is hazy for me, and I wonder if Bulls fans feel the same way. Maybe some do and maybe some don't. Hit us up at 331-979-1369 if you want to drop your thoughts on any of this. Matt, you got anything else before we do our lottery episode for tomorrow?
Yeah, just a reminder for those of our listeners who are in and around the Chicago area, if you want to, tomorrow night, NBC Sports Chicago is hosting a draft lottery watch party at Public House in River North. I will be there along with my Bulls Outsiders co-stars Big Dave and John. Mark, Kendall, and Will are going to be there. Special guest Archie Diacono, the best Bulls point guard of the 18-19 season, will be there doing a Q&A. John is going to be emceeing a little trivia for Bulls fans before the lottery gets going with some prizes. First 100 fans in the door get a free T-shirt, a lottery-themed T-shirt from Compliments of NBC. We're going to do a pre- and post-lottery reaction show and prep show of Bulls Outsiders. Mark, Kendall, and Will are going to be on air reacting as those lottery balls are being announced. It's going to be a lot of fun. All the tables that were available to reserve have been booked, which means A, it's going to be a lot of fun. There are going to be a bunch of people there. B, you can still show up even if you didn't reserve a table. Plenty of bar space, plenty of room to stand around, hang around. Hopefully it'll be a lot of fun and it'll be a celebration. And that's how I'm going into it, because I am telling myself that we are gonna get that number one pick. Or, you know what? I'll be okay with number two. And that's how it's gonna be. So come on down to Public House tomorrow night if you're around Chicago for our NBC Sports Chicago Bulls Lottery Watch Party. Should be a lot of fun.
Big time here for the NBA in Chicago over the next week. NBA Combine is going on too. So outside of the lottery, the NBA Combine... Mm-hmm. As well as a couple other things we've got cooking for the next month or so. So depending on where the Bulls end up with their lottery pick, I'm sure we're going to have a lot of talk about prospects over the next month or so. And two, some of the invites that the Bulls are giving out, handing out to prospects at the NBA Combine. So we'll touch on all of that later in this week and throughout the next couple of weeks as we head into the NBA draft. But that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Very, very excited for the lottery. I know there's a lot of anxiety in Bulls Nation right now, and let's hope for a celebration tomorrow night on Tuesday. Because, yes. Matt, I don't want to come back on Wednesday and say that we fell from 4-7. I really don't want to have that conversation on Wednesday. So good vibes only.
I won't be here, man. I'll be dead. If that happens, I'll be dead. Oh. I don't know how, but I do know that I will be dead.
So make sure that as soon as those picks are revealed tomorrow night, hit us up with your reaction, 331-979-1369. We want to hear from Bulls fans. Drop us a voicemail or a text message how you're feeling as the lottery unfolds and where the Bulls end up. We really, really want to hear from you. So hit us up again, 331-979-1369. You can tweet at us, at LockedOnBulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow to preview everything NBA lottery. Do all your superstitions in the next 24 hours, and let's hope that we end up with Zion. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, we are out of here. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com. Bust down, Tatiana. I wanna see you bust down. Over.